to the podcast, where we talk about all the things that are hidden in the shadows.
This is Isaac, and on this bonus episode, I'm joined again by young William from WTCW Paranormal. What's going on with me?
Doing well, doing well. How about yourself?
Just suffering some injuries, but I'm getting over it. Like I was saying before we started recording, I've never got to interview or never been asked or never asked others, another paranormal investigator to get interviewed twice, unless I work with him very closely, like Mike from Unknown Paranormal. Me and him work very closely with a lot of cases we do together. But other paranormal investigators, no, it's kind of like one and done. I might have a few more back on again, but that's more of a roundtable thing, which actually I think I might bring you in as well, because we've gotten to know each other pretty well over our short time knowing each other. But he asked to come back on, so that's first time. So
yeah, you said that, you know, the audience received it well, and I, you know, got to give the people what they want.
Yep. Because I always told everyone that as someone for your age to be mature as you are and have a good head on your shoulders, that is a surprising thing. Also, a fresher breath air, especially in the paranormal game, where it takes years and decades to gain that kind of perspective and respect for the paranormal. So to see it in someone already young as you is something that we hope for the future. So
thank you. It takes a little bit of sacrifice of the partying and doing normal teenager stuff. I just sit at home reading books about theology like a loser.
Yeah, I was more of a musician in high school. I never did the party thing. But so you had to make me think of some questions that if I had the chance to ask a paranormal investigator for a second time interview, besides just getting to know him the first time, what would I ask him again? So I do have a little more of a harder questions to answer right off the bat. But what's been new with you? What new investigations have you been doing since the last time we talked?
I think the biggest investigation I've done since the last shooting of the podcast was I was invited to the Trinity Apostle Church for an investigation, which it's pretty rare you'll get invited to a church for a paranormal investigation, considering they don't believe in ghosts for the most part. But lucky for me, it was an apostle church, and apparently a lot of the people that have frequented there had been seeing the spirit of the reverend. So I was going down the list of, you know, locations I wanted to email about investigations, and I was lucky enough to have the people at Trinity, more specifically Father Grant, reach out to me and give me permission to go in. And throughout the investigation, I worked closely with renowned paranormal author Hunter J. Sky, if you want to go check her stuff out. But yeah, so that video will be coming out here within the next week or two. It's been a lot of work on that video specifically. I tried out something new, and I'm really excited for everyone to see that. But it's not the only investigation we've done, but I think that's the most noteworthy thing I've gotten up to.
Yeah, I had a few investigations myself, a few cases, and gained more perspectives in the supernatural, which being in our field of investigation, the stuff we'd learn, this is a question, like I said, these are a little more harder to answer, but you might actually think, what are things in the paranormal do you find hard to believe?
That is a great question. And if, you know, the people listening or you couldn't infer from the first interview, I'm a little bit more on the skeptical side of the paranormal. I'm a little more like, I'll believe it when I see it. I think one of the most skeptical things I believe in the paranormal is I just have a hard time wrapping around the idea that ghost orbs are a thing. I feel like unless it's like a ball of light or a figure you catch on camera, I feel like almost every time I see a ghost orb, I'm just like, well, what does that even mean? You know, it could have been a lens flare. I mean, if I were to point my camcorder at an angle towards the sun, it would make a lens flare. Would that be five consecutive ghost orbs in the line with the sun? You know, ghost orbs have always confused me a little bit. I just feel like when I see pieces of evidence using them, I'm just like, well, I don't know. That's one thing, and that's a pretty unpopular opinion. I've gotten a little bit of people not understanding why I don't believe them, and I'm just like, well, I don't know. It's just it's not even in the shape of a human being. I mean, humans aren't in the form of floating dots, so when we die, why would we be in the form of floating dots? I mean, you
It's just
know.
people, or it's just, well, I've always been, I'm gonna say partial, so I don't really say yay or nay on them, but I have seen floating lights at certain locations. And I always say if it's blinking, obviously it's a light bug or something or a firefly. But when I see consistent lights moving as if it's some a source of light that's illuminating on its own, moving at its own pace, then I'm like, oh, what the hell is that then? But like I said, I've only seen them a few times. And always theorize what exactly, if they are 100% real, what would they be? Like you said, humans don't take the shape of light orbs. But then again, you're basing that idea on your physical vessel, the human body. When you leave, that shape is can become anything. Essentially, we always project ourselves as what we knew, i.e., the shape of a ghost. So you see a person, not completely solid, sometimes solid, depending on the experience you might have, but in the time between being like the shape that you desire because it's what you're familiar with versus to what you actually are, they theorize that the orb is the essence of the energy that is moving around. But when you take the shape that you want to be seen as, that's what you create the form that you're familiar with.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair theory. I feel like that makes sense, you know. I just feel like I said earlier, I think that like ghost orbs in the front of like glowing balls of like light, 'cause I even posted, if you've seen the farmhouse haunting video I did, one of the pieces of evidence that the lady who did the house call submitted to me was a video of, you know, a ball of light outside her house. And you know, I feel like actual lights are more compelling. When I say ghost orb, I mean on the front of like the classic semi-transparent, shows up for a second, you know, goes towards the camera and then dissipates and that's it. You know, that's what I'm just like when people try and show me a ghost orb, I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. But that's just me, you know.
It definitely is like the lowest hanging fruit of paranormal evidence, like the
Yeah.
easy one to get. But that makes me wonder though, what do you consider shadow figures then? When you see a shadow figure, is that little like a shadow figure run across an area, do you find that more credible than say orbs?
Oh, much more credible. Absolutely. Yeah. Because an orb, I mean, think about it. It's a lens, you know. Unless you see the orb with your own two eyes, why would that be anything paranormal? You know, anyone that has worked with cameras for an extended period of time knows that light will reflect on your camera and things will just show up weird sometimes, you know. I mean, like I said, you know, my comparison earlier, a lens flare, you know, sometimes light just reflects and it makes little balls on the camera. Now, it's a whole different scenario where if you're in a house and there's a light on and then a shadow figure is on camera and it runs, then it's like, well, you know, what is that? Because I mean, the only explanation for that would be if there's someone's physical hand blocking the lens of the camera.
Yeah.
But I mean, assuming that's not the case, then I think that's a lot more credible than something like a ghost orb.
Now, to flip it on you, is there something in the paranormal that you believe that others that you've met have a hard time believing?
Yeah, so the area I'm in, the Hampton Roads area of Virginia at least, is like very Christian. It's like churches everywhere, and my whole family is Christian and all these things, and I feel like a lot of the time when I meet people that are Christian, their belief is that anything that is not positive is demonic. It's a demon, you know. And when I try and convince people of, you know, what if it's not a demon, what if it's a ghost, then they don't believe me, and they're like, oh, the demon's tricking you. I'm like, well, Ed and Lorraine Warren put it best when they, if you watch their Seekers of the Supernatural special on television, they said, well, what are the three main figures in Christianity? The Holy Trinity. What is it?
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
33% of your religion is based on a ghost.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it confuses me. That's one thing that's pretty unpopular with me is just the fact I believe in ghosts at all. But within the paranormal community itself, one thing I believe that a lot of people don't believe is that I actually think that skinwalkers are real. I feel like I don't know if I want to loop paranormal investigators and cryptid people into one thing because they're two totally different things, I feel like. But I think skinwalkers are like a part of the paranormal. Like, I feel like they're almost a type of entity that would be like a demon or something of that sort. Like, it sounds like it has almost every characteristic of a paranormal entity or like a demon. They essentially live to cause fear to people. They were, I mean, to my knowledge of skinwalkers, they were never human at any point in time, outside of if you were to look at the historically accurate version of skinwalkers, which was, the tribe of skinwalkers that wore animal hides and such like that. But, the folklore version of skinwalkers were never human. They can take the form of different things and aren't really bound by one particular form. And they can manifest themselves in multiple ways. It really just sounds like skinwalkers aren't even cryptids. It just sounds like they're straight up a variety of like demon, almost like an elemental, I guess you could say.
Well, I've encountered four in my time. And the actual histories behind skinwalkers are Native American medicine men who have gone wrong. It's strictly to the Navajo tribes, the ones who kind of created the entire idea. Granted, there have been sightings of so-called skinwalkers all across the United States, but they kind of say it was kind of our thing first. But anyway, the whole premise of it, how it even started, was that evil medicine men would make a sacrifice by killing someone they loved the most. And doing so would get granted the power of shape-shifting faster so than someone who said who did it the right way. Because there was good skinwalkers, people who did the practice, but it took so much that the practice was kind of just given up for, a simple gift of switching to an animal. Now, whatever hide you wore, wolf, jackal, a coyote, a deer, whatever that was, that's the shape that you form into at certain points in time. So in order to be a skinwalker, you technically had to be human. Now, when they're dead, when the spirit of a skinwalker, which, like I said, I've encountered four times here at my place and all the way in North Carolina. I always spoke about my ability. Most people listen to the show and know what I'm talking about. But when the essence of what I pull and I put in the ring is a person, the second part of it, the animal part, is still out there. It's almost like their mind was split into two, and I have to grab both parts in order to take in there. But they are of evil creatures. They are evil. They essentially want to create fear. They do kill people. They do all that, especially the ones that are alive before they're dead. There's a lot of sightings. There's actually even people who hunt them because they're still learning their tribal ways of how to do so without, getting killed themselves. But it's an interesting thing that you consider a demon. I always considered demons things that were never human, but you're on the right point. If you consider them, if they never were human, then essentially would be a demon because demons never known humanity. But the Skinwalker lore, the legend from the Navajo tribe, is that they were just evil medicine men who made a terrible sacrifice in order to gain that power to shape shift to somebody, to an animal of the hide they carry. Now, what's dangerous is that we bring other animals to United States and stuff like that. So imagine a skinwalker with a tiger hide, right? Or some other kind of more dangerous animal. It just makes it more scary of the thought. But
That would make them more dangerous, but a lot less inconspicuous. Because imagine you're out in the woods and you see a tiger walk around, and you're like, seem a little out of place. If I were to be suspicious of any animal being a skinwalker, I'd probably be a little confused.
like that shouldn't be here. No, that's a good answer. Yeah, because not a lot. It's funny because that cryptid people and paranormal people who live in ghosts, we're kind of in the same amusement park. We're just riding different rides. So it's like we're in a still the outcasts of the strange, but we're all trying to prove something that most people don't want to believe. Go
One
ahead.
thing about the cryptids that makes it a lot more confusing to me, like the reason I personally believe in the paranormal side of things is that, like, with the paranormal, a lot, like most people that you meet, or a lot of people that you meet, they'll have at least one ghost story. Even if they don't even believe in ghosts themselves, they'll have one story where it's like, eh, that shouldn't be possible. With the cryptid thing, like if you walk around New York and you ask like everyone you see if they've seen any given, like if you were to ask everyone if they've seen Dog Man, I feel like your success rate would be a little bit low. I don't know. I just feel like the cryptid thing, they're arguing something that's more difficult than paranormal because they're trying to prove that animals that aren't acknowledged by science exist, but the paranormal has been acknowledged by science partially, enough to a point where people have taken the time to experiment on, psychics and stuff like that. But no one's really, I've never heard of a scientist taking like cryptid stuff seriously enough to actually look into it, which makes me a little bit more suspicious of that. Once again, I mean, I'm not in the place to judge anybody because I'm a paranormal investigator, but I just felt like the cryptid thing has always been harder for me to wrap my head around.
Well, sometimes they get it right. Like, granted, there's some outlandish cryptids out there that make no sense of why you're even trying to bring it up. But at some point in time, the platypus was considered a cryptid. And now it's an actual animal that we acknowledge existence. Because if you describe the platypus to someone who's never heard of one before, you're like, dude, you're making a bunch of shit up. What? It lays eggs, but it's a mammal? What? It looks like a duck and a beaver put together? What are you talking about? It's got duck flappers? Yeah. You'd have a hard time really.
I didn't know the platypus was a cryptid at one point. I actually just learned a crazy history lesson there. Wow.
Yeah,
I didn't
before
know
it
that.
was cryptozoology considered a cryptid because people had sightings of it, but never could prove it to anyone until they actually captured one in the wild and we started finding them and we started put them in zoos and then we just learned about it and then it became an actual animal. So because you had to remember someone describe a platypus to someone who's never seen one, like what? Doesn't make any sense. You make it up stuff. Yeah.
Aren't they venomous too? Man,
Yeah,
platypuses are just a weird puzzle of an animal. They're a mammal that lays eggs and are venomous and look like a beaver, but they have the duck, like a duck's snout.
yeah.
Very weird.
Their back there, their hind legs have little like little claws that come out and just, like stab
What an animal. Yeah, no wonder that was accepted at one point in time. I feel like Bigfoot is more believable than a platypus existing.
Yeah. And if Bigfoot ever gets proven 100% real as much as the platypus, that's gonna be a whole nother can of worms open. You're gonna have all the Bigfoot enthusiasts going, say we told you for years.
I feel like out of every cryptid, Bigfoot's like the most believable one. I mean, he's essentially the equivalent of just like a Neanderthal, Like he's just like a slightly smarter gorilla, pretty much.
If we had a scientific terminology, people like to use a term, the North American ape. Essentially, it's an ape species that either migrated here at the same time that humanity did in the kind of the same way or before us, and they migrated the forest, but our ancient Homo sapien humanity kind of pushed them into the woods, kind of pushed them out, along with any other humanish species. At least that's what theories of history go. But kind of depleted their series, or you go into farther crazier theories about Bigfoot that he's trans-dimensional entity who has technology to do so,
Nah,
which
I can't. I can't. You're right. I think your metaphor was like right on the money about we're both like the paranormal and the cryptid community are both like a little bit taboo, outcasted, a little bit weird, but we're on different rides of the theme park. Because at no point would I theorize that ghosts are like interdimensional beings that build portal like Rick and Morty. Portal gun. I don't know. No hate though. I have a lot of friends that are into like cryptid stuff. Just confuses me.
Well, I learned a lot about Bigfoot ever since we did our two-part episode. So there's more that I never knew that was around that people have theories on. So, and then it was a whole, like I said, another thing that I never think I would dip into about Bigfoot. But speaking on such things, any new theories about the paranormal world that you've adapted, you considered, even thought about?
I've been thinking a lot on the theory that ghosts operate on a fourth dimensional plane, because I've been doing a lot of research on the fourth dimension because once again, I'm a high school student, so I kind of my science teacher is just talking about it. I thought it interested me, so I watched a lot of videos on how the fourth dimension works, in comparison to the third dimension. And I feel like it makes a lot of sense because it's like the typical characteristics of a ghost are what? You can't see them. They can kind of phase through things, kind of go through walls, stuff like that. And they can move stuff in our third dimensional plane, but you can't see them moving it. They just can, And also, affect certain devices without us knowing why. And that kind of resonates a lot with the fourth dimension because a third dimensional, like let's say there was a fourth dimension, which if there was, we probably would have known by now, but who knows? Let's say there was a fourth dimension. They would have all, like the humans living on that dimensional plane would have all the abilities to do essentially what a ghost does. Because in the fourth dimension, you can see through everything. You can essentially walk through everything too. And to a third dimensional being, it won't even look like you're there, because we can't even comprehend the idea of what someone who lived in the fourth dimension would look like because we can't see them. We have an understanding of the lower dimensions, like the second dimension and how that movement plane works. But we wouldn't understand anything of how the fourth dimensional plane works. So I think it makes a lot of sense actually to say that ghosts could operate on a fourth dimensional plane. I think that's a theory that if it were to come true at any point in time, I would be like, yeah, okay, that's fair. But as of right now, I'm still sitting on my current philosophy that ghosts are just humans that died and we just can't see them and they're kind of just around for whatever reason. Which is, I think the standard philosophy.
Well, me and the missus and a lot of some other investigators I've talked to, some psychics, mediums as well, we all come to the same conclusion that both your theories are right at the same time. There are higher dimensional planes. It keeps going up and up and up and up. And so far, everyone can't really agree which if it's 12 or 13 or 10 or 12, but in that range, let's say from 10 to 13 different dimensions all the way up. Fourth dimensional space and time don't exist the same way we see it. And you go higher and higher, those laws that we are bound by in our third dimensional space, which is here, start to break down or not exist at all. Not the same way we see it, the same way they travel, the same way they move, all that. Hence why some alien species claim to, at least from people that encounter, say they're transdimensional, or at least that's the way they travel. How do you get from point A to point B in such fast speed? You don't travel the distance, you cut the distance in half and move from one point to the other, or travel another dimensional plane where space and time doesn't exist the same way, come back into our third dimension that way. But I always theorize that the fourth dimensional space is where spirits are, where ghosts, demons, everything in the spiritual essence is. The ether is the space between ours and theirs, hence why they can see us, manipulate us, attack us, grab us, scratch us. The more energy to consume, the more way they can be here in our third dimensional plane, but it has to accumulate an amount of energy. Hence why your batteries get drained, the lights dim, they flicker, right? All that sense of energy is sucking it up in order to do something, to be heard, to be spoken out loud, so you can hear them talk right next to you versus the spirit box. And that's another thing too, our technology, right? Able to pick up voices on a higher dimensional plane. If the way the high essentially microphone works. So we're already created technology that can listen to the other side. And there's a guy, I can't remember his name, some scientist from like the early 1920s, 1930s, who used radios essentially to connect to the other side and high frequency hertz combined with the radios to connect and talk to the side. He actually invented a radio that allowed him to speak to the other side as much as they were speaking to us. And it was strange is that when he spoke to the spirits on the other side, they were speaking to him like, oh, you figured it out, but we already knew. So it was a weird concept. Like they were building technologies on the other side to communicate with us as much as we were trying to do it with them. So there is a whole another kind of concept on that, but you're correct, or at least what I say correct, but we don't know what the correct is until we know. But I theorized the same with the idea of combining spirits and ghosts are there, but also it's a higher dimensional plane where they are allowed to free move through space and time. So,
Yeah. Which is that I think if that theory would be were to be true, then that would be an explanation as to why residual hauntings can even happen in the first place, because, time doesn't operate the same way in the fourth dimension. So things that happened far in the past can loop like that,
I just remember his name, Marcellino Bacci. Bacci? No, Marcellino Bacci. He's an Italian guy. Came with the whole concept of it, the ITTC radio or something like that. Can't remember, but it was something interesting that I learned about when it came to the idea of communicating with the other side. Speaking of communicating with the other side, did you find any new techniques you've learned?
I'm taking a big liking to more simple equipment, which has always been something I was interested in. I don't remember if it was this podcast or Paranormal in Pennsylvania, but I said that most of the equipment I like to use is I like to call measurable phenomena. So it's essentially, did I talk about that on this podcast or is it something
No,
I can't
or that's I
remember?
never heard that terminology before.
Oh, I made it. It's
Oh.
yeah. No. It's not. Yeah, I said I like to call it measurable phenomena. It's essentially evidence of the paranormal that you could show just about anybody, and they would unanimously agree that it was something beyond our understanding, even if they didn't believe in ghosts. Essentially, for example, things like motion sensors, temperature readers. Electromagnetic field reading equipment, surveillance systems, audio equipment like parabolic microphones, stuff like that. Because I feel like the spirit boxes and REM pods and stuff like that are cool, but if I were to walk up to somebody that didn't know anything about the paranormal and show them a clip of like me talking to the spirit box and having like a cool interaction, then they'd be like, "Well, what does that mean?" You have to be at least slightly versed, either that or have the person who's showing it to you explain it to you first before you get it. But if, you see a video of an empty hallway with a camera set up at the end filming and there's no one there, and then motion sensors are lighting up for no reason with nothing in front of them down the hallway, that person would look at that and be like, "Whoa. Well, why is it doing that? Is there something there I can't see or I don't understand?" And the reason I call it measurable phenomena is that it's like temperature is measurable, electromagnetic field readings are measurable. So you can measure the changes of the environment. I think one aspect of the paranormal that gets a little bit neglected, I forgot who the scientist was, but it was these experiments that are conducted, and I think it was like the 20s or 30s. And essentially what he did was he made a seance room, and it was a room he built, and he lined it top to bottom with environment reading equipment. Nothing like, obviously it was the 30s, so they didn't have paranormal equipment to begin with, but nothing like fancy. He just had like precise thermometers, and then a surveillance room outside with other scientists carefully taking note of, the temperature, and a barometer in there, and I think 20 cameras in the room. And he would bring these, people that claim to be psychic or mediums. They'd do, call them in and do seances and have the surveying scientists outside of the room take exact measurements of the environment in the room. And they noted that as the seances began, there was a temperature drop of 18 degrees throughout the course, gradually in the room. And he made sure the room was insulated. He didn't put like AC unit or anything in there. And it dropped about 18 degrees and remained lower in that room significantly until a couple hours after the course of the experiments, and he brought in multiple different mediums. And I think that was like the closest thing we've ever gotten to like scientific proof of ghosts existing. And I know that similar experiments have been conducted since then, but I think this is probably the fire starter for following experiments. But I read up about it in an article, and I thought it was really interesting. So that kind of made me adopt the mindset of, well, what if I were to do things like a little bit more scientifically and have other people, like I have six new hires joining the team, and one of them, their job is to essentially just document everything we catch from temperature to taking pictures to, EVPs and just everything. So I can really document everything, and then, the evidence will accumulate and it'll build a case for me to maybe one day truly prove ghosts exist, even though that's everyone's goal. I feel like it's a new method to try out. I haven't seen anyone else doing something like that. And that's kind of something I've been doing the last couple months.
Has there ever been someone's, well, I'll say everyone dabbles in trying to do so, but never has ever made it their main goal, right? Not basically trying to perform a science, trying to perform a science experiment while investigating at the same time. So you are doing something again, past your years, even to consider. You said six people you've brought onto the team?
So previously, now we've gone through plenty of members. And it's not because I'm like a mean boss. It's really just because a lot of people, especially around my age, they get excited by the prospect or the idea of working with a paranormal team. And then once they get to doing it, they realize it's more boring than TV and stuff like that. And then they quit. But essentially, it was me, William Bateman, and Lorraine, our psychic, for a long time. And then just recently, I reopened applications because the workload of managing everything for WTCW was just, it was just murdering me. Because I'm a full-time student. I work a part-time job to pay for all the stuff that WTCW, all the expenses and my gas and everything. And then also I manage all the social medias for WTCW, manage all the cases. I'm the lead investigator, all that. So I have a lot on my plate to a point of like, it just got to a point where I couldn't juggle it anymore. So like I need to have open applications and have enough people to where I don't have to do everything anymore. So that's what I did. I think applications closed about a week ago and they opened a month ago. So yeah, we have six new members, two cameramen, one tech specialist, one paranormal investigator, and then one case manager. So our next investigation will be a house call, and that will be their first investigation, and I'm really looking forward to opening my horizons.
I just wonder, I have my strict rules, almost test, you would say, for qualifications for joining my team, hence why it's still at just me and my wife right now. But what are your, always curious, what are your qualifications for joining your team?
Qualifications of joining the team are essentially this, and this is what every applicant outside of like the first starting four people that joined were. It was essentially, at least for these new hires, I opened a Google form for team member applications. It just asked some general questions: name, age, experience, what's your motives for joining the team, what position do you want? I think we listed like four or five: paranormal investigator, case manager, parapsychologist, demonologist, the whole shebang. And then I reviewed all the applications. We had about 12. Now, the goal for me was to get people from around the age range of 16 to about 40. That was the, because we had applicants applying that were older than that.
Oh, geez.
I had multiple people. I had one guy from Smithfield, Virginia, who was 54, and another lady who was like 60. It was, you'd be surprised. Because a lot of people don't know that I'm my age, you
Yeah.
know. But regardless, so that was kind of, you know, 16 to 40. And we ended up landing in that bracket, which was my goal. And then I wanted an even ratio because everyone that applied, the easiest position, and I think the most position that everyone wants to do is be a paranormal investigator. And I was expecting that going into it. And I was right. We had about 15 applications, and looking at the pie chart for the data was, I think it was 70-ish percent of them applied for paranormal investigator. And barely anyone else applied for anything else, which is what I expected. You know, that's the fun position. That's, you know, the one that everyone knows about. But that's not what I was looking for. So the majority of those people didn't get in. You know, I think it was only one person that got in because we really didn't need any more paranormal investigators. And then so I review all the applications and then I add all the new trainees to a group chat. And what I essentially do is I made a document, just a Google Doc, talking about our PR statement, general information about the team, like how we schedule investigations, notice, payment, you know, if whether or not you'll be featured publicly, et cetera, stuff like that. And then I write up some general information about their position, as well as linking two or three YouTube videos about it if they don't already have experience. And then I'll do like a little examination. For example, we have a new cameraman joining, Max. He's 16, he's my age. So I was pretty skeptical of him because he was 16. And I was pretty capable when I was 16, but I've had other people that were that age join and they did not do a good job. But
Worst of leverage when you're moving all around.
so I told him, I said, send me a 1 to 2 minute video of the most cinematic shots you can get, edit it all together and send it to me. And if it looks good, then you're in. And that was it. That's all I told him. And if he couldn't even do that, then why would he be a cameraman for the team, right? I thought it served as a pretty good test because if you can't even make a cinematic looking video that's, you know, 30 seconds to 2 minutes, then I mean, come on. That's what I did, and he sent me a beautiful video. It was really good looking. I think I'm probably gonna post it to my Instagram just to show everybody once he's officially in. And then for the case manager, once again, if you want to apply to a house call, there's a Google form, just asking some basic questions. I'm gonna start sending some real people at him, and then also some fake made up people at him. And I'll have all of them report back to me on how he did and send me screenshots of what he said to them, and see how he does on that front. And then once he's done, you know, 5-ish people, then I'll let him in. I mean, all of the different positions have different qualifications. So, you know, that's kind of the general process. Apply, be within the requirements, read the PR statement and study, and then do your little examination and then you're in, which is a lot more tight than it was when I opened applications a couple months ago. Because when I opened applications a couple months ago, it did not go well. But
Those are, like I say, probably the most well thought out way of getting someone on your team because it weaves out the nonsense. Like you're getting right to the point of what you want, which is probably why you might piss off a lot of people my age because they are just envious at the fact that you have all this together and you still got a long time to go before you reach the average age of a paranormal investigator these days is in their 30s. So. Hopefully, by the time you're my age, you're already well on your way to like a worldwide show and world-renowned paranormal investigator, William, or WDCW Paranormal, right? Or whatever the name might change later on. Who knows? But no, that's like I always say, you give me hope for the future of paranormal investigating.
thank you. Yeah, I try. I try. It's hard, you know, especially when I started, because nobody wants to work with you when you're that young, because they just don't think you're credible at all, which is fair, because you most people aren't. But, I had someone comment on one of my investigations a couple weeks ago, a video that I posted, and they said they commented under it, and they're like, "But you guys are so young," and then like a heartbreak emoji. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, why is it sad that we're so young doing the paranormal thing? I guess the reason they said that was maybe they thought someone that I knew died or something of that sort. But I just replied to them, and I was like, well, it's never too early or too late to start doing what you like doing. And they replied to that. They liked it. So I was like, yeah, I like to live by that sentiment.
One question that would make sense for me to ask someone who's been in the game longer, but you might have figured it out yet, or maybe you're still learning for it. But have you discovered yet the reason that got you into the paranormal in the first place? If not, what do you have to do or learn to find that out?
Well, the surface reason really is, like I said, I experienced a haunting when I was a kid from the ages of 7 to 11 in a house where two previous owners died, and it was a really intense haunting. I don't remember if I talked about it on the show before or not, but yeah, that's the surface reason. When I was 7 to 11 years old, I had a really, really intense haunting, actually. I moved out of that house, and as I got older, I kind of just adopted standard mindset of ghosts aren't real, and I was just crazy, or maybe there was some type of explanation for it. And then when I was like 14-ish, I started getting into a lot of like paranormal shows and things of that sort, and I was like, made me think about what I saw when I was younger. And I was on the fence about whether or not the paranormal was real. And I was like, I'm just gonna go find out for myself. Like, why should I listen to what everyone else has to say? If I listen to a paranormal investigator, they're gonna say it's real. If I listen to anyone else, they're gonna say it's not real. So I don't even know who to listen to. So I'll just go look for myself. And that's what I've been doing since Halloween of 2021. There could be a deeper reason as to why I started doing it, The narrative shifts between, not believing they exist at all to randomly one day getting curious about it and looking up all these paranormal videos and shows. I don't know what invoked that. Maybe one day at some point on my paranormal journey, I'll find out, if there's a deeper meaning as to why. But that's the reason as to, or at least that's what I make it out to be.
I know most people always give the answer, like, I need to know if there is something after we die. Is there another journey? Is there another form of life? Since that old question of what happens to us after we die, right? Everyone wants to know that. It's almost like a compulsive order to know, because not a lot of us are accepting of the idea you live, you die, that's it. There's no nothing after. That's it just seems boring. And from everything we've learned as humanity, just to give up at that factor alone seems lazy. It seems like we're not thinking hard enough or thinking deeper enough to what happens to us after, because we have enough evidence with the paranormal to say so. Well, there's almost piled enough evidence against alien activity. A lot of people believe in aliens these days. No one really cares. But when it comes to understanding the paranormal, the essence that supernatural world exists, most people choose either not to believe, because the idea of believing that there is another dimensional world where these spirits live that can come in and out any place at any time scares them to death. Like, the idea of that is just terrifying. So they become ignorant to the whole idea. And that's, like I said, my hope for the future of the paranormal almost aligns with yours, an idea that scientific community starts taking it seriously to a point where they start inventing technology in order to study, see, or even measure the supernatural world, the energy that it creates and generates. That so far, the only thing we're able to measure it with is EMF detectors, which is meant to detect the EMF electricity coming from the planet. But somehow, spirits and ghosts set off the same signal that signal would set off as well. Hence, where you got the disbelieving points that supernatural is only cracks and shapes in the earth where certain parts of EMF energy is really high. And that's why people hallucinate and see things and all that, which doesn't always seem to be the case for some places.
Yeah, I don't know. It was for me personally, it was really never about finding out whether or not there's something after I die. Actually, that was never something I wondered about, you know, wanting to find out if there was something after life. You know, it'd be nice to know, but the main objective for me really is to find out if ghosts exist at all. You know, period. Just ghosts in general, not even the afterlife, just ghosts specifically. You know, and then once I find that out, you know, then I'll start wondering about. I think the first course of action, if science were to truly one day confirm that ghosts exists, I think the first course of action to take is to figure out what the true religion is. Because the idea that ghosts exist ties heavily into religion, because almost every religion is simply about the afterlife, you know, if you really boil it down. So then we had now, you know, the next course of action is to figure out what the true religion is, right? At least in my mind. Or if none of them are true and ghosts are just the religion to believe in, I don't know. It was just, for me, it was never about the afterlife. But I think that might have been because I was raised in a Christian household and kind of got the idea drilled into my head about heaven and stuff like that. So maybe I wasn't as curious about that stuff, but
Well, in my journey of trying to understand the paranormal, at least from my perspective, I had to search elsewhere. I'm talking everywhere, which I would bestow that same knowledge onto you to do so. Look in other faiths. Look in, I don't say become other faiths, but look into them. See what they believe. See what they understand. See what they've known. Look at old cultures and old histories of the world, things that they learned, things that they figured out with the supernatural, things that they applied from shamans, from witches, from other people who became, we called, not spiritualist or anyone of that essence, but people who practice magic or any of the essence. There's a lot out there that seem to be kind of blocked off if you just focus on one idea of Christianity. It exists, it needs to exist, but there are so much more other answers, other places to gain other more perspectives. And gaining perspective gains you more knowledge on what you're hunting or what you're trying to figure out. So I did that for myself, and the things that other cultures have done and did and the stories that they have outdo anything so far that we've been able to create here. But one, I guess one of the final questions, but one of the questions that I always want to ask, is there still something about the paranormal that terrifies you that you either have experienced yet or have already experienced that you do not want to happen again?
now, one thing that kind of sets me apart from other investigators is I really, in the paranormal field, I haven't really had an instance of like, I haven't had like a come to God moment where it's like, oh my God, this is terrifying. Like, this has scared me so bad. Because my experience in the paranormal, I've never had anything that necessarily like has terrified me. Yeah, I've been creeped out, especially the first couple times, you know, you ride the roller coaster. And you're, you know, sitting alone in a haunted house, talking to no one, you know, and that's scary. I've never had a moment where, you know, I've caught a lot of things on camera, like footsteps coming towards me. That was pretty scary, but I wouldn't necessarily say I would never want that to happen again. Once I said, or once again, I think it comes down to like my mindset of anything for the research, because. You know, I once again, I hate to keep promoing other people's podcasts, but I was asked a similar question on Paranormal in Pennsylvania. They were like, "Is there anywhere on Earth you wouldn't go?" And like instantly, I was like, "No." Like, I don't think there could be anything that would ever happen to me while investigating that would make me be like, "I don't ever want to experience this again." Because if something huge and drastic happens, and I am able to document it effectively, I'm gonna be like 1 point paranormal investigators, 0 point scientists. Let's go, you
Yeah.
know. But that's just me, you know. I'm sure, but once again, relatively new to the scene. Maybe one day something will happen that, you know, really knocks me off my feet, and I'll change my mindset. But I've had some pretty creepy stuff happen to me so far. I mean, the footsteps coming towards me, the you know, really, that whole investigation of the fairy plantation house, crazy stuff was happening the whole time. I've seen things get moved, door slam, caught EVPs. I mean, I've seen a lot of the sights to see as a paranormal investigator, and there's never really been anything that has deterred me, I guess you could say.
Well, that's good. Most people I've had that I remember I talked about other investigators with before, and usually the thing that always scares them that change their mindset and how they investigate is dealing with anything that could be or potentially could be demonic. Because dealing with something like that, they're not dealing with a spirit that wants to communicate. They're dealing with something that wants to damage them, wants to hurt them, wants them to leave, and will do anything possible to do this. So sometimes an investigator will come up with a different mindset after being attacked. Scratch, choke, push, almost like, push downstairs and stuff like that. Like, oh crap, I have to change the game so that doesn't happen again. But if you have never experienced something like that, that's probably your hopefully you never do, because that kind of trauma is something no one wants to ever live with. But I just thought maybe you maybe had experience like that already, or yet possibly came into a situation where that could have happened, but you were able to get out of it
Well,
on.
I have one experience I haven't shared that with or haven't shared with anybody publicly, so we're getting a little bit of an inside scoop here.
Ooh.
this was the one and only instance where I think I've dealt with something that I thought was actually a demon. I've had a lot of instances where I'm communicating with a spirit and they kind of like to buff themselves up and act like they're a demon. This is a little bit of an inside scoop and not anything I've talked about publicly, but there's only one instance where I've encountered something that was what I believe to be actually demonic. And I've had a lot of instances where I'm communicating with a spirit and they like to buff themselves up or try and scare me. For example, at the Fairy Plantation House, I was using a device that it was kind of a phonetic voice box, reads the EMF, spits out a word. I don't really like to use devices like that anymore because I don't think they're like very grounded in science. But at the time, I was really new to it, so I was like, yeah, whatever, let's try it. Tried it out, and I was like, where are you from? Spits out the word hell, and I was just like, oh, that's creepy. But that didn't scare me that badly. But this was something that scared me. So it was the backstory of this is that I was planning on investigating one of a family friend's properties out in the middle of nowhere in Mears, Virginia. And if you've never heard of Mears, Virginia, it's for a reason. It's because it's middle of nowhere. It's this big farmhouse, and our family friend just so happened to get it for very cheap. And the reason why is because at one point in time, a family of five lived there. And the reason I say at one point in time is because three of them died. One of them was an infant child when they died. Two of them, the father and son, were killed in a lumber accident. A couple years later, some new people moved in, and an arsonist set the house on fire. And the arsonist is still in jail. He set it on fire about 2010. So the family friend bought the property and renovated it, and made it all nice and made it look like look like it never caught on fire. And a couple months after he fully renovated it, he invited me and my family to do a little stay there, to which I did. And it was, I mean, as I'm sure you could imagine, not super soothing to hang out in there. All five of the people that died are buried on the side of the house, and they all died pretty horrifically. So I'm sure you can imagine how delighted the spirits are to see that literally everything they once knew has been renovated and random people are in their house now. So everything had been replaced in the house except for one thing, and it was this door leading into the garage. You could tell it wasn't replaced because it was scorched. I mean, parts of the door were just blackened. And I was with my cousin at the time, and I was staying in the room. It was a guest bedroom. And the door began to shake violently, very violent, just shaking like someone was trying to get in. And naturally, I was like 12, didn't believe in ghosts. I was like, this was the period of time where I didn't believe in ghosts. I was like, oh, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's an animal. There's a Bowie knife. I mean, it's a country place. There's just random weapons everywhere. Grab like a Bowie knife and open the door, thinking it's like a raccoon. I have to defend myself or scare out of there. There's nothing. Nothing behind the door. And that was one of the paranormal encounters that I had there. There were a couple of note, but I don't want to drag the story on too long. We went back home, and a couple years later, after I started WTCW, I was like, man, investigating that place would be awesome. I think we'd catch a lot of stuff if I were to investigate there. Reach out to Kevin, and I'm like, hey, I want to do a paranormal investigation of this the farmhouse because I had the experiences there, and I know you've had experiences there. And I know you own it, so let me know what you think. And he agrees. So fast forward to about 2 months later. It's a week before the investigation, and I'm really matter of fact, no, sorry, I got the timeline all wrong. It was a day before the investigation. So that night, I'm trying to go to bed. I love investigating so much. So I get super excited. Like it's the night before Christmas whenever there's an investigation. So I couldn't fall asleep. I was excited. Couldn't fall asleep. And when I finally did, I had this nightmare that I was in the house. I was in the house with my other investigators and the power went out. And, all of us were walking around the house blindly in the dark, trying to find the power box, power fuse to flip it back on. And we couldn't. And so I was wandering around the house aimlessly, and I was just overcome by overwhelming fear for whatever reason. And then finally, I had found the fuse box, and as soon as I reached to it, something from behind me with big black arms. Like I look down and all I see are huge black arms engulfing the lower half of my torso, pull me into the void. Like pull me into nothing as soon as I find the fuse box. And then I wake up after that nightmare. It was super vivid, and I wake up after being pulled into the metaphorical void. And I was like, wow, that was a crazy dream. That was pretty scary. But I mean, I knew it was a nightmare. I was like, yeah, it doesn't mean anything. And then from downstairs in my house, I hear this really crazy noise. Have you ever heard the noise of like coyotes fighting? They just scream. Have you ever heard
Yeah.
that noise? Yeah. Like, go camping, you might hear it, and it sounds like a woman screaming, and it's really scary for a second. I heard that coming from downstairs in my house. I woke up and I was awake. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning when I wake up from my nightmare, and I'm sitting up in bed in a cold sweat, and I hear the noise. That screech, and I was like, oh my God, what happened? I thought somebody, someone in my family was hurt, and I try and get out of bed, and I get this crazy scent of or sense of like warping vertigo towards the door. Like my vision, I go like tunnel vision on the door, and I couldn't align myself right. So I stumble out of bed trying to get to the door. I couldn't get up. Like I was super dizzy. I could barely see anything. And I just kind of black out. And then a couple minutes later, I wake up again thinking that maybe it was another nightmare. Sometimes you'll think you wake up and you're still in a dream. So I was like, wow. So I sit up and I do all the tests to make sure that what I had that I'm not still dreaming, right? Because I was scared shitless at that point. I had a super scary nightmare, woke up from it, and then had some really crazy shit happen. And then I was like, let me make sure that wasn't a nightmare, or maybe I'm about to get, murdered by the Babadook. Let me just make sure. So I sit up in bed, pull out my phone flashlight. I'm pinching myself. I'm making sure I'm slapping myself. I'm awake. 100%, I can tell you 100% guarantee I was awake, fully conscious. And I was like, okay, maybe it was a dream. I'm not dreaming right now. Let me just try and go back to bed. Turn my light off, lay back in bed. I'm laying there, still super anxious. My heart's beating. And a really weird sensation that's never happened to me before happened where I couldn't control my body anymore. I'm laying in the bed and I'm about to fall asleep, and I feel myself kind of like contorting. Like, kind of like if you ever had someone like hit a pressure point and it makes you kind of curl up. You ever had that happen to you, or like something where your body kind of involuntarily like curls? It was almost like that, but I was contorting. So I was involuntarily like moving around my bed. My limbs were kind of like flailing, like slowly. My torso was spinning and my spine was moving around. And it was really weird and I couldn't control myself like at all. Like I tried to stop and I, fought as hard as I could to stop moving. And I just couldn't. And I had this electrical sensation just pulsing through my body. Every movement I made during that little sequence of like contorting was, I was like being electrocuted. And I couldn't move until a point of like, I literally contorted to a point where I fell off my bed. And then once I fall off the bed, I black out again. And then I wake up the next morning. It off my bed on the ground, and I was like, "What the hell was that? Was that a dream, or what was that? What was that about?" And it got to a point where I didn't even know what to think about it. I was like, "Did I get like temporarily possessed? What was that?" And I think the conclusion I ended up landing on immediately after was that maybe in my sleep, I had like asphyxiated myself. Or asphyxiated myself to where my like body started tweaking out and having weird dreams. I didn't know what happened. I just knew I was fully awake, tried to go back to bed, and then started contorting like damn Exorcist girl, and then woke up the next morning on the ground. And nothing has happened similar to that since. And and I've never had anything like that happen before either. And I mean, like I said, I'm a very like scientific guy. That's kind of why I landed on the conclusion that something like my body was messed up or something was going on with me that night. And actually that day the investigation ended up getting canceled from Kevin saying that he got super sick and he didn't want me to come anymore, but that was disappointing. But regardless, that was the craziest thing that's ever happened to me. And once again, despite that, I would not care if it happened again, and it has not deterred me at all from investigating.
But it should make you conscious about having some kind of protection. I always ask every investigator, what protection do you bring with you while you investigate? I'm not talking about weapons from what a random hobo might run at you in the middle of the woods for. I'm talking protection within the supernatural. Granted, I have my ability, which basically innates me from any kind of attacks. But for everyone else, not so lucky, I always ask, like, what do you use for protection? Certain stones, do you bring symbols?
I wear a crucifix necklace, bring holy water, holy oil, sage. I pray. And then also I bring my psychic with me and she brings like, she'll have Palo Santo on her and some of those more like herbal protection things. And then now we're actually following my investigation of the Trinity Church. We're actually kind of like semi-partnered with them. So, I can at any given time I can get a blessing or have a house blessed by Father Grant. So that's a protection I use, but I don't know. I don't know what to make that night. It was just that's kind of why I've never talked about it, because I felt like that just sounds like a crazy person story. Like that sounds like if I were to walk into like an office for schizophrenic people and ask them what happened last night, if they had a dream, that's the story they would tell me.
Well, I've had something similar to what you described. A dream where you wake up and the whole power is out in the entire house. And everyone's looking for the box. I've done that myself. I actually get out of my bed when we used to live in a house in Spring Branch. Granted, it was years before my ability even came to me. I remember getting up, I remember looking down the hall, seeing my wife, and I was girlfriend at the time, and her family looking around the house to try to turn the power back on. And I try to yell to them, but I can't speak. It's almost like someone's strangling me. And then I feel a hand come from behind and grab my throat and almost pull me backwards. And then I end up waking up. But when I wake up, I'm not fully controlled. I'm stuck. I'm in sleep paralysis, right? I can't move. And it happened to me, and I was sleeping on my side with my, arms crossed. And then I remember feeling hands put them on my chest, my shoulder, and literally push me to my back. As I'm laying on my side, and enough anger and like I need to stop this, I need to stop this, basically woke me up, and I started swinging my fist out in the air, like get away from me. But that was probably the only time I felt anything how you described it is how I that remembered it
I
as
would say
well.
that sound that was that wow, that was like the ex like to a T, like the exact same thing almost as to what seemed to have happened to me. Wow. Yeah, power went out. I'm on an investigation. Look for the fuse box, find it, get yoinked into the void backwards, wake up, and I can't control my body, and then wake up again later on.
I told that story in early episodes of the podcast when we were talking about sleep paralysis, because I only ever had it twice in my life, was that moment and another moment happened here in this house. But that moment, what happened here in this house, was far different from that one. But that's the only time I remember. And it was strange because I felt like I was awake when I was trying to get their attention, like, hey, what's going on? But I couldn't say it. I was like I was trying to yell it, but I couldn't. And that's when I felt like a hand come from behind, and I felt like someone was pulling me backwards. And then I woke up, but then when I woke up, I was stuck. And I could only move my eyes, and I could feel like somebody standing next to me, but I couldn't see them. And that's when I felt like hands pushed me to my back. And I was like, oh, I'm not dealing with this. I'm dealing with this. And I basically got myself up. And when I did, I noticed Megan was asleep right next to me. And I was like, all right, what the fuck? What's going on? And I'm going to go back to sleep. Check my phone real quick. Okay, I'm going back to sleep. All right. And it didn't happen again. Granted, your contorting thing, that strangely enough reminds me of what happened to Megan. And this is the part where you're probably gonna get a little more scared. One of the nights we slept in Spring Branch, and I've told this story many times on the podcast, but for you, this might gain some perspective. I woke up in the middle of the night and I kept hearing scratching on the wall. It's like a bunch of scratches everywhere, like claw scratches on the wall. I'm like, we have rats or mice, what's going on? And for some reason, the ceiling fan spinning above our head was loud, like almost helicopter blades, like whoa, 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 just really loud. And I was like, what the heck's going on? And I turned to Megan, fast asleep, sleeping on my shoulder, twitching, like someone's electrocuting her in her sleep. Her eyes are closed, she's dead asleep, but she's like twitching her head, twitching her neck, like someone's electrocuting her, right? And I'm like, what the hell? Then I feel like these eyes of hatred and heat staring at me. And I look up into the top corner of our bedroom. And there's a black mass up there with like two red eyes just staring at me. And I'm like, what? And I did the only thing that came to my head, the first thing that came to my head. I crossed her forehead like priestly when they bless you. And she instantly stopped twitching. And that hatred of heat just started staring at me more, like I could feel it. And I look, turned down, look at my phone because I remember the all witching hour. And I see 3:59, boom to 4 o'clock, silence. I look
Wow,
back, shadow,
crazy.
gone. I hear no scratching, the fan's normal sounding. I'm like, I told her about it the next day and she got freaked out. But the contorting, that's what it reminded me of. It's almost like a demon who's like, he's trying to control your vessel at the same time and testing, see how it worked. Though he probably thought you were asleep for the act, but
No. If it was a demon, I caught his ass lacking. He was not inconspicuous at all because I was fully awake.
yeah.
I was literally like, what's going on? That story, or like the story of what happened that night, will probably drive me crazy forever because I've never had anything even remotely close happen. So I can't even have like a reference or like some kind of theory or explanation. Because with Megan, at least you were there to see that it was a demon. But for me, I don't know if it was a demon. Or if I was like my body, like I don't know. I don't know. But it's that story definitely gonna drive me crazy for the next eternity.
Have you ever been back to that place since?
Nope. I really want to investigate there, but ever since then, he kind of just like fell off the map. He was like, oh, I'm sick. I don't want you guys to come anymore, which was disappointing because I had on the book for 2 months. Then he waits till the last day. I was pissed, but regardless.
Sounds like something's influencing him not to allow you to come.
Maybe.
Which I've
Maybe.
seen before with especially with demonic cases or potentially demonic cases. Sometimes the person who wanted you to come the most all of a sudden backs out of it and they get scared because they're afraid that if they allow someone to investigate, the activity will get worse.
Oh, yeah, I've had that pl plenty of times. Plenty of times. Yeah, like people in my family live in like a haunted place because everyone knows at this point. Like everyone that knows me knows about WTCW because Hampton Roads, pretty tight-knit community. So once you start doing like anything mildly interesting word kind of gets out. Everyone at my school knows, all my friends know, my family knows, extended family knows. So I'll have people that I know call me in, and then I'm like, okay, I'm coming to investigate. And they're like, never mind, I don't want it to mess with me afterwards. And I'm like, well,
I know, after 32 home investigations I've done, I'm starting to see the patterns of how things work out. And when you're dealing with possible oppression cases versus someone just dealing with a aggravated haunt, but how you describe what happened to you, and that I would say you were on the borderline of being oppressed, but the fact that it didn't happen or continue after that, saying maybe it was a warning shot, saying don't come here again or else.
maybe because the nightmare did start in the farmhouse, which, mind you, Virginia is a very long state. It's long. It's not tall, but it's long, and
Yeah.
it's like on the very like this side, and Hand Roads is on the coast. So for me to have a dream in the farmhouse that I hadn't visited since I was 12 and I was 16 at the time, and then maybe something from the farmhouse didn't want me to roll up or something of that sort. I don't know. Don't know, but it makes me want to go back there even more.
Yeah. But I think that wraps up our time. I do appreciate coming on again. You giving me more information and more hope into the future. From our first conversation, I was pleased, but even a second, I'm even more pleased. So, and I guarantee everyone who listened to this part will have the same perspective as well. And also scared the shit out of them too. So, everyone always looks forward to that stuff. But tell everyone, where can they find you? Where can they find WTCW Paranormal?
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, all at WTCW Paranormal. No capitals or spaces. If you want to book an investigation with us, you can find us on Google, WTCW Paranormal. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
As always, we'll catch your weirdos in the next one.